Dearest listener, welcome to A Bridgerton Podcast, a weekly show dissecting the Bridgerton family and the ongoings of the rest of the ton, presented by Mr. Ben Butler and the Right Honourable Robbie Christmas. May God have mercy on your souls.
Thank you to Lord Whistledown for that lovely intro. Hey, Robbie, how are you?
I'm good. I'm holding my breath every time you do that intro. You nailed it.
I thought that was like low energy, but yeah, I nailed the actual words this time, which was a start, I think.
It's only taken. You can do it again if you want.
8 or 9 episodes. Honestly, I'm fine to run through it. It's the part I hate the most about doing this podcast. Everything else is wonderful, but doing the intro is something I signed myself up for, and it's just been bad every time.
I don't think you're, I think you're being too hard on yourself.
Thanks. I think I've lost all sense of perspective because we're sort of in a groove now and I've kind of forgotten what the world is like because I don't really see any like humans in real life. So my only real human contact is Zooming with you in the evenings to talk about Bridgerton.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
It is nice having a world where like the audio fidelity of communications is hard. Like we're not in a coffee shop trying to overhear you and the acoustics are always solid and stuff. So there's been some improvements.
Instead, I'm looking at you over Zoom with 2 mattresses behind you because of you've made your own little makeshift recording studio.
Yeah, it's a recording studio / fort, so it's sort of a 2-for-1 setup.
It's your pillow fort?
Yeah. I gotta keep myself entertained, you know? But look, pillow forts aside, things with me are pretty good. You know, we now have listeners in 42 countries, which, honestly, if you were to put me on the spot and ask me to name like 42 countries, I'm not sure if I could. And, you know, despite the Golden Globes snub, Bridgerton was nominated for 2 SAG Awards, which was pretty great, which the first was for Best Ensemble Cast in a Drama Series, and the second for Best Actor for Reggae, who plays Simon. But to put that in perspective, Bridgerton got 0 nominations, and Emily in Paris got 2 Emmy nominations.
Every year, somebody gets snubbed, and it's always the ones that shouldn't be snubbed, mm-hmm. you know? And Bridgerton, that's debatable, I don't know. But there are some other good shows out there that never get any attention year after year after year. So
that's true.
Like this one. This one never gets nominated for a podcast award.
Well, I guess we haven't been running for a few weeks, so I'll keep the judges on side for now. But look, I think this is the week that our podcast really steps up a notch because we have a guest joining for the first time.
We do.
Yeah. So today we have Jade Hayden, who's the deputy editor of her.ie, and a lover of gherkins who I knew what gherkins was, but I had to explain to Robbie what gherkins was. And we opened up a whole transatlantic can of gherkins, I guess.
How did you not know what a gherkin are? They pickles over there, is that what it is?
Yeah, they're pickles.
Okay,
they're pickles,
right.
Over here.
Yeah. I feel like they're slightly different over there as well. I don't really think they have, do they come in a jar with brine? Is that the whole vibe, or is it okay?
Yeah,
okay,
they come in a jar with brine.
They're the same. Yeah, quite like them. I forgot that I had that on my social media, so thank you for that.
Yeah, sorry, I pulled that from your Twitter bio. I haven't just been like creeping around your kitchen. Yeah, like, oh, this girl really loves gherkins.
I'm going to mention that on the show.
But yeah, Jade, I'm really excited to have you on. So thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited as well.
I thought we could warm up by doing a TikTok game. Now, Robbie knows that I'm not on TikTok and I get my TikToks filtered through Instagram and Twitter. But apparently there's a Bridgerton name trend on TikTok at the moment. Have you guys heard about this?
Mm-hmm. I vaguely heard of it, yeah. I didn't know it was a TikTok thing.
So your Bridgerton name is, first you go for Lord or Lady, then go for your middle name, then third is the last drink you had, fourth is you add ton, and then off. This is quite complicated, I'll put this in our message so you guys can see it. Then it's the first part of the street name. This sounds like a recipe for making a 4-course dinner, and add Shire at the end. So I might give an example as to my one. So it would be Lord, my middle name is George. The last drink I had was water. So it'd be Waterton, and then off, Pierce Shire. So So I'd be Lord George Waterton of Pearshire would be my Bridgerton name.
I'm going to end up being a Waterton as well.
Street name. You guys have better street names. Mine's like, my street name, I think, is like 83rd. It's like a number. It's not going to sound very good.
Maybe they're just 82 former lords.
Yeah. It would be, mine would be Lord. I had my middle name changed. My mom wanted me to change my middle name to pass on her maiden name. But
What was your middle name before?
Daniel.
This does seem like a, between the pickles or the gherkin thing and this does seem like a, like we've created a whole podcast just to do a phishing scheme to kind of get old Jade's personal information.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, what was the name of the first car you had?
Yeah. What's the street you live on?
So now we're done talking about Bridgerton. And what was the first pet that you ever had?
Yeah, exactly.
Just so we know.
Robbie is just telling us, you know, his mom's maiden names. Like, we're all just sharing our mom's maiden names.
That's true.
Now that we're friends.
So, okay. So my Bridgerton name would be Lord Daniel Coffeyton of 83rd Shire.
That's a nice one.
That's decent. A good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine would be Lady Shawnee, because I have a very strange middle name. Waterton of St. John's Road West.
My middle name is Shawnee as well. That's what I got. That's my mother's maiden name. So.
Oh, really?
No, I'm just kidding.
No, okay. excited there. I was like, that's a coincidence.
That would have been great.
That would have been excellent. Okay, so Jade, we'd love to hear, I guess, from you in terms of someone who, you know, you and your side, you're putting out a lot of articles about Bridgerton. Mm. Like, the audience seem to be super into it. I'm sure you're getting a lot of like press releases and stuff. Like, I've seen this term around called like the Bridgerton effect. I'm wondering if you could like explain it to us. Like, you know, we picked this show kind of on a whim, and like, you know, I thought it would be successful. It seems to have, you know, gone beyond anyone's expectations in terms of the like the viewership and also the effect it's having on just the world we're living in right now.
Yeah.
Like, what do you credit that to? Like, what do you put it down to? What makes Bridgerton so popular?
I think it's sort of like the thing that every now and again, there's just this one show that everybody just becomes completely obsessed with. And it usually happens around Christmas time when everybody has nothing to do. And from what I've kind of seen, it usually ends up being like a true crime kind of documentary or something just a bit thrillery that you then have to spend like weeks and weeks and weeks writing about like all the new kind of like facets of it, new information that's come out, and people just become like enamored with this thing. But for some reason this year it's ended up being Bridgerton, and it's something so like fun and bright and like just different to anything there's really been before. And as much as, you know, I would like to credit it to like great writing and, you know, an amazing cast and the fact that everybody's so upset during the pandemic, like it's probably because people just had like literally nothing to do over the Christmas holidays other than sit at home and watch this series, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just happened so quickly and now everybody's talking about it. It's kind of, I still can't get over the fact, I still tell people that it's the number one show of all time on Netflix. It blows my mind.
It is crazy. And like, it's still topped. Is it number one still in Ireland? I think it is. It keeps jumping up and down like every couple of days. But it is funny because I was writing a lot about it before the Christmas holidays and like scheduling bits in for when I wasn't on and for when the show would go live. And I was kind of like, I have a feeling this is going to be a massive hit. Like, you could just kind of get the feeling from the hype that was around it. But I was also just kind of sitting there and I was like, what if people just hate this and I'm wasting all of this time like writing up all of this, like, oh, seven things you just know about whatever. And like scheduling all these interviews. And I was like, what if it just bombed? What if people don't like it at all? Because, you know, it took me a good solid four episodes to actually get into the show. Like, I was kind of watching the first couple and I was like, I don't really know if I like this, but I kind of wanted to like it because I knew that it was going to be huge and I knew people were going to be talking about it. I did think it took a while to kind of come into its own. And I was like, oh God, what if this is just a massive waste of my time? But thankfully it wasn't.
Do you think that people jumped on this show ironically? Do you think people watch this show because they want something to talk about? Or do you think people, like a majority of people, watch this show because they actually truly just enjoy it? Like, they take it seriously? Because I feel like I've met people on both sides.
I think the majority of people took it seriously because the majority of people like kind of like quote unquote trashy drama that's easy to watch. Yeah. I mean, I suppose the different thing with Bridgerton is that it was actually, you know, it's well written, it's Shonda Rhimes, so it kind of does have that like backing behind it. Like the cast were great as well. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like traditionally, like people just love something that they can just throw on in the background that doesn't require that much brain power. Like if we're talking about the Golden Globes earlier, the fact that Emily in Paris was nominated for however many awards and like something like even like Bridgerton wasn't nominated, fine, but something like incredible, like I May Destroy You wasn't nominated for anything, you know, and people are just up in arms. But it's like people just, they just like that kind of airy fairy stuff. And I think Bridgerton definitely hit the point between being airy fairy and being easy, but also kind of having a tiny amount of complexity and depth to it as well that you don't usually get with just standard kind of, you know, fun dramas.
Yeah, I think that's super well summed up. Like, I think I said Emmys earlier, not Golden Globes, but Golden Globes for sure. And I'm curious, I want to ask kind of both of you this, like, do you think there's a point where Netflix can throw up like literally any old shit and just promote it and it will be successful to some degree? Now, I'm not saying that is Bridgerton, because I agree with Jade. I think there's more to it. And I think, you know, this did have the Shondaland pedigree, and it does have great casting, and they haven't invested a lot in it. But an example for me has been Superstore, which like has been a few years old, but it like launched on Netflix recently. Has been in the top 10 in Ireland since it debuted, and I'm up to watching like season 3, and I don't enjoy the show. It's incredibly predictable. Like that's partly my like comedy brain, like I can see where it's going, but I think anyone watching it would just like know that it's super predictable. I don't really care about what happens. Like I like find myself like yelling at the TV during it, being like, this is so stupid. But yet I spent cumulatively hours, tens of hours over the past few days like watching the show. And like I guess my question is like, is there a point where, you know, this become the biggest, Bridgerton has become the biggest show on Netflix, which de facto means like the biggest show in entertainment. And if you have this model now where there isn't really competition, like Netflix is the default entertainment space, if you just put that into my like feed and prompt it at the top, like I am going to watch it, and if it's not terrible and there's like pretty people in it, like will it just succeed?
I think the algorithm question is definitely an interesting one, because I mean Netflix has some complete shite up there on that website, and if you dig around you'll find it and you'll be like, how in God's name did this get made? Like I remember years ago when they used to do Netflix originals, I used to be like, this is going to be a great show with an amazing cast and the acting's going to be incredible, and then they just started putting out any old shite and I was like, oh, okay, it actually doesn't mean anything anymore. But I mean at the same time though, if I log on and something is up there on that top banner and it has like a pretty graphic that's probably tailored to me because it knows exactly what I want to click into, I probably am going to watch it. Whether I'm going to get to the end of an episode now, that's a different question. But like, I'm quite picky and I don't like watching things that I don't like. But I'd say a lot of people literally just throw things on, have them playing in the background, and then Netflix can turn around and be like, oh, they watched all 10 episodes. That counts as a household.
This show, particularly with, you know, it's Regency era stuff with, four poster beds selling out, but of course it's being super popular again despite the fact that we're ostensibly not seeing anybody. There seems to be something about this show's like aesthetic or the show's kind of cultural effect that despite it being a show that's just been viewed a lot, it really seemed to be having an effect on the wider kind of culture at the moment. And I'm wondering if you've seen much of that from things you're kind of like reading about or writing about.
Yeah, I mean, I think you always kind of get those people who are like, oh, I was born in the wrong era. I just wish that I could be a Bridgerton and live in Regency London and not have any rights and be so oppressed. You know, it's just like, it's this weird, like, disconnect that people tend to have with, like, pretty content and pretty movies and TV shows that they just kind of, that's all they see is the surface level. And the one thing I will say about Bridgerton is I think it does kind of blend that reality of the time they were living in with the kind of the fun and the comedy and the sparkles, because, you know, you do have characters like Eloise who do kind of like, they're, you know, they're funny. And I do see her as like very much a comic relief character, but she does mention a lot the fact that she can't go to university. You know, that's kind of one thing I would remember about her. So I do think it does kind of like pepper in these moments that does remind you that, you know, even though everything you're seeing is gorgeous and everybody here is so beautiful, that like maybe aspiring to be these people isn't the best thing you could want. That being said though, I mean, sales on 4 poster beds and corsets and embroidery sets are up. I don't know what that says about people, like, as a society. I take umbrage with the embroidery stuff as well, because like when I heard that, I was like, oh my god, like over Christmas I had a notion where I wanted to get into embroidery and I wanted to like buy my first sewing kit online and all this stuff, and I wasn't doing it because of Bridgerton. I was doing it because I was bored and I wanted to take up a hobby. And I was like, I want to get skilled at something. But then I was like reading all the stats about people who were getting into it because of Bridgerton. And I was like, maybe subconsciously I was just looking at Daphne, like sewing some cute patterns while like, you know, getting it on with the Duke. And I was like, oh, maybe I wouldn't mind a bit of that actually. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like step one, embroidery, like step two, like dot dot dot, step three, having sex with the Duke. It seems like a logical progression.
Yeah, no, it is funny though, because you know, like ever since Bridgerton just exploded, it's like you get these kind of strange sort of like company requests coming into your inbox because you're someone who writes about the show, and they're kind of like, oh, could you feature my whatever it is, my artwork or, you know, my things I've done. And a lot of them are just kind of very like samey, not really worth thinking about at all. But one came in today, and it was literally just like, hey Jade, we think you'll be interested in this steamy story in the lead up to Valentine's Day. And I was like, okay, like you've piqued my interest, what is it?
Yeah.
And it was literally a virtual nude life drawing class, but like themed with Bridgerton. So I presume aimed at couples, aimed at singletons. I'm not really sure. I'm going to read you the email because it was...
Please do.
It was ridiculous. Like, so it says, following a surge in requests, Life Drawing Company, a nude modeling agency, Nude Life, is launching a virtual Bridgerton-themed life drawing class featuring position recreations from the TV series Steamiest Scenes.
Wow.
But there's one thing they need more of, dot, dot, dot. Bridgerton lookalikes. So they're essentially like, they're trying to promote their life drawing class, but they're also putting a call out for people who look vaguely like the cast.
Wow.
To like, I don't know, like stand in front of a webcam and like be drawn by a load of horny Bridgerton fans. I don't really know what the appeal is.
How do you come up with that?
They're saying that people are requesting it now. I don't know how true that is, but
I think it's genius because like they're really just messaging you saying like, hey, we do these live drawings on Zoom and we're looking for people who look like the people in Bridgerton. Like, it's not even an announcement like, oh yeah, hey, we have the cast and we're ready to go.
No,
it's like,
no, they're not even ready.
We had this idea like, and like if you want to put a call out maybe for models as well, like that would be helpful. I when I first heard that I was like, that's ridiculous, but I am like, they've sort of won me over. Like, I do kind of want to check out a nude like drawing class, you know. Definitely low down in the list of things that, you know, I miss from the pre-COVID world, but I could have had a chance to try out, like, you know, drawing someone's nude body before, and I probably won't get to do that for a while. So doing that over Zoom might be the, you know, the only thing that I can do for the next while.
I wonder which cast members too, like which characters they're doing nude drawings of.
Yeah,
like,
that's the thing.
Like, I wonder if they include Mr. Finch.
Oh, it's Mr. Finch, I would absolutely sign up.
The one I'd that
be... I'd quite like a bit of Nigel Bearbrook. That'd be great.
I actually looked up online because I was on Google and typed in Bearbrook. He looks so different. The actor looks completely different to me.
I did the same. Yeah, I couldn't remember his name earlier today, and I just typed in Bridgerton creepy man and up he came. So.
That is really bad for his SEO. That's what comes up.
It's like an article from like the Tab or the Cut or something, and they're ranking the men from Bridgerton just like on creepiness, and like he's number one, of course.
I'm looking at that same article. I think the Bridgerton men ranked from ultimate fuckboy to sweet Prince Frederick. I'm actually kind of surprised. I'm a little up in arms at how low a Prince Frederick is rated. Mr. Finch is higher up on that list than Prince Frederick.
Well, is it being ranked on like attractiveness or how much of a fuckboy they are?
It doesn't really say.
You're looking at a different list to me. There's obviously multiple rankings of the men of Bridgerton.
Yeah.
Because Nigel's only third on this one. Nigel needs to be number one on all of the lists.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And Nigel is not a fuckboy either. Why is he so far down?
Exactly.
Is there a call for Simon being worse than Lord Birbrick?
I don't know. I think if we'd seen more of Nigel throughout the series, because I'm now on first name terms with him, maybe be rethinking that one. I don't think he wasn't around for long enough for me to truly villainize him. You know, he's obviously an awful person, but when I kind of hit episode 5, I was like, when's Nigel coming back to ruin somebody else's time at the party? He just kind of disappeared.
I know. I was kind of expecting that too. I was surprised that, because the last we hear of him is when he gets blackmailed into dropping the case that he has against Daphne for not marrying him. And then we never see him again. I kept waiting for him to come back at the end of this series in some sort of cliffhanger, but we just don't see him. So maybe we'll see him in the second season.
Yeah. Or I was kind of hoping that he'd come back when the Duke was kind of very steadfast and it's like, I'm not fathering any children, that, you know, he just kind of return and be like, oh, well, I'll give you babies. And then she'd kind of go off with him for a bit. But I mean, obviously that's not the way that the writers wanted the show to go, which is fine.
I do like that as a plot point. Something, yeah, like a thing Robbie and I have been running through this is thinking about the scenes that have had to happen in between the scenes shown, in the world of Bridgerton. There's a bunch of stuff, for example, in one of the earlier episodes, Daphne and Simon are in the Somerset House, and they're looking at the painting, and Daphne really likes the painting that was Simon's mother's favorite. So Simon, off screen or off camera, asks for that painting to be returned to his house, under great duress. And then when it actually happens, he's like, what the fuck, where did this painting come from? And a servant's like, oh, you asked us to return. And he's like, oh, get rid of it. I don't care. And Robbie and I just enjoyed imagining all the things that had to happen in between those. And I think stuff like Lord Birbrick is another great example of is he just hanging out with his mom? What's his retirement plan? He seemed not terrible apart from
all the things that he did. Yeah.
I guess just the further we went on, I'm if our hero Simon, if that's the bar for being a good guy, I'm suddenly everyone else is in a kind of better light now.
Yeah. The bar is still clearly incredibly low, even in the 19th century. If you have fuckboys, then it only makes sense.
That's it. And do you think with both your inbox and with Bridgerton more generally, with Valentine's Day around the corner, I can imagine a resurgence of the show, it going back into the number one in a bunch of countries around and in other countries around the world. I'm curious, Robbie and I kind of went to town a bit on the sort of negative portrayals of love and relationships that are in the show. There are some more positive ones. I think Penelope and Colin, if that plays out, I think is maybe a nicer kind of version of love there. But what do you think of, if for young people watching the show and them seeing couples like Daphne and Simon and being not only do I want to go back in time, but I want to have a relationship like this. I'm just curious what kind of message you think it's sending to people.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I was listening to the podcast where you guys kind of talk about that questionable sex scene between the two of them as well. And it was, it made me wonder a lot when I was watching it, surely somebody on the Shondaland team flagged this and that they were all fully aware of the fact that this isn't just a normal sexual relationship. But the issue is that when it's just kind of presented as is to millions and millions of people, you're not going to get everybody watching that and being uncomfortable by it. You're going to get people watching that and just thinking that that's a normal thing and that, Daphne was well within her right to kind of not stop even when he wanted her to. I think that's where the issue comes in, because as much as, the Duke is beautiful, he's not a good man. He's not a man that people should aspire to find and to settle down with. And I think we kind of face that issue a lot in popular culture, where we have these tortured men who are unable to communicate what they want or say how they really feel, and they treat women quite poorly but they're not seen as the villain. You know, it always mm-hmm. I always think of 500 Days of Summer. I used to absolutely yeah. love that movie when I was younger. Same. And I was in love with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And at the end of it, I just thought, oh, I want a boyfriend like that. Like, that's what I want. And then as I got older, I was like, that's not the goal at all. Like, we're meant to be on Summer's side. But when you're watching it, you know, as a teenager, you're not. You're like, she's being so unreasonable. Why can't she just be in a relationship with him? And it's just, mm-hmm. it is like confronting when you look back on that stuff and you're like, oh God, that was quite problematic. So I think we're definitely going to get a lot of, I think, probably younger generations looking at something like this and being like, God, isn't it so romantic how they went on together? And even the idea of having, like, you know, an arranged marriage and being presented to society in that way, like, like that sort of stuff makes my skin crawl. But mm-hmm. I can imagine a lot of people being like, oh God, wouldn't that just have been so much easier, you know, back in the day? You're just brought up into this, like, gorgeous, wealthy family, and you're just presented and you have all these men fawning and falling at your feet. And, like, you know, it's very clearly not the way these things play out. But yeah, I think if people want to kind of look at it through this, like, rose tinted veil, then I mean, they're going to do that. It's bound to happen.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Totally. I do kind of want to run through the tabs ranking of, like, the worst guys in Bridgerton.
Yeah, let's do it.
Just because, like, I do enjoy our, like, heavy relationship chance, but I'm like, oh, I should also have some, like, laws as well. So I just want to see if we agree with the rating. So this is from the tab, who is categorically the worst guy in Bridgerton, a considered ranking. So at number 8, we have Will. I think this is a pretty solid rating. There's a poll at the end that you can take, and Will, I'm not sure how many people have taken this poll, but Will is literally on 0%. Not a single human has voted for Will as the worst guy in Bridgerton, which I think is just my one redeeming, I guess, trait or thing about humanity, is that, like, not a single person has been like, this guy's bad.
Is it maybe because people don't remember who he is? Because I'm looking at that man's face and I don't remember seeing that on my TV screen.
I think because most of the time you see him, he's just like abs, and Simon okay. is there shirtless as well. So
right.
like,
that might
he's a boxer.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So we have Prince Friedrich, and in the article they've described Prince Friedrich as the biggest simp going, which seems harsh. He'd call you beautiful every day, bring you breakfast in bed, and always get you the most expensive birthday present you could possibly ask for. He'd whisk you off for bougie dates, you'd put it all over your Insta story, and mate, your mates would be so jealous. There's just one problem. You'd get the ick so quickly with the prince. Now, Robbie, do you know what that phrase is? Getting the ick? I think that might be more of a British-Irish thing.
Yeah, I mean, I can gather what it is, but I haven't heard it before.
It's sort of like when something someone does puts you off them massively, but the something that they did is just really specific and strange, and not something that you generally be like, oh, that's disgusting, or that's really unattractive. The best one right. I saw recently was somebody said that they got the ick from a guy when he sent her a Snapchat and she could see that he had a printer in the background, and she was like,
I was thinking of the same one.
That's yeah. the best one. And she was like, oh, I got the ick because he has a printer.
Like, that is very Seinfeld. Like, everything about, like, Larry David and, like, the way that Seinfeld is written is all about characters getting the ick. That perfectly puts it in context for me. Yes,
I am reading back through this other tab article of the worst guy in Bridgerton, and to be fair, at number 4, Anthony seems like pretty on par with how you initially described Anthony, Robbie, which was Anthony's a massive shagger and treats Sienna, the opera singer, horribly, but he low-key really loves her. Of all the Bridgerton boys, he's most likely to hit you with the "it's not you, it's me" line. Anthony is the kind of skinny jean guy who offers you and the girls drinks at a bar and then thinks that's his green light to spend the night with you. If Anthony was born in the 21st century, he'd be a club promoter, and he can't change my mind.
That's the truth. He is... I just can't get over, like, one of the opening scenes in Bridgerton in the first episode when he's having sex with Sienna up against a tree and he's checking his watch. And then when he realizes what time it is, then he starts going faster. And that just, from this second that I saw that, I was like, this guy sucks and I'm not going to change my mind. And I haven't changed my mind. He's been pretty terrible throughout the entire series.
Well, we have a whole series, too, that's focused on Anthony. Do you think he'll change his ways?
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know how sincere it's going to be. But I tell you, honestly, if that guy just got like 8 hours of sleep and ate like an actual breakfast in the morning, I think he'd be a much better human being. He's like, for me, Anthony is like how you feel about the Queen, I feel about Anthony.
Well, like, Jade, for context, I sort of say irrationally, but I would actually say quite rationally. I haven't been a fan of the Queen in Bridgerton. I think she targets and bullies teenagers, and I think she's just...
I thought you were going to hit me with some like anti-monarchies about Queen Elizabeth, and I was like, where is this going to go? And you're like, oh no, the actual queen from the program. We're still on topic.
Yeah, queen from the show.
Queen Elizabeth is out there bullying teenagers.
She also seemed to be very involved in these people's lives. You know, like, I know they're out of society, but the fact that she's just hanging out in their houses all the time and going to their garden parties, I was like, really? Like, I know we're living in a fantasy world here, but like, was that realistic? I didn't really understand what her role was.
Yeah. 100%.
Seems like, shouldn't you have like a more important things to do?
Multiple wars, like multiple like Napoleonic wars are going at this time. And she's like, which 16 year old is the hottest? And this Gazette didn't write about my party, so shut it down. I think she's the worst. A question for both of you. So like, series one has been this massive, hype. Like, do we see, you know, them sustaining that momentum in a world where, you know, they're trying to start filming soon? Like, that seems tough to do in the current scenarios. Like, it'll be 2023 probably, or late 2022 at best, if they can like push something out quickly. Like, do we think that Bridgerton will sustain for season 2, 3, 4? Or is this going to be more sort of a flash in the pan and only the kind of diehard fans will stay on for future series?
If Grey's Anatomy taught us anything, is that we're going to see Bridgerton for a long time. We're far from the peak of popularity, I think. I think when it comes back on, everybody's going to be talking about it. I don't think it'll probably be in like their fourth season when, you know, cast members, if they do follow the similar formula that Shondaland's other shows have, I think, you know, popular characters will either be killed off or they'll leave the show. And after that, I think it'll still keep going, but I don't think it'll be as popular. So to answer your question, I don't think it'll be a flash in the pan. What do you think, Jade?
I have a feeling they're going to rush season 2 because they want to keep riding the wave. And with the likes of COVID, and like you were saying, Ben, like, that's not going to be easy. So I can imagine a season 2 coming out and just not being fully formed. But that's not to say that it's still not going to be as popular as this season was. But the one thing I am sort of like wondering about is that, you know, a lot of the kind of obsession and I suppose fandom around it was centered around the Duke and the fact that people found him incredibly attractive and endearing for all those like horrible flaws that he has. And he's not going to be a big part of season 2 at all. And people have been like actively lamenting this in the comments on like, you know, all the information about season 2 and what it's going to be, and that it's going to be about Anthony. And, you know, I just don't think it's going to have the same push because people already know Anthony. They're aware of that character, and I'm just wondering who else they can kind of bring in to kind of lift it to those levels again.
Yeah, the summary that I came across, well, one, like, yeah, the official announcement was like from Lady Whistledown was saying we'd be focused on the Viscount with it, Anthony, and then the plot seems to be that he like decides he wants to settle down, falls for this particular girl, ends up meeting that girl's sister, who by virtue of the fact that, like, well, clearly we won't be a match, become a sort of match over the course and the trials and tribulations, and the sort of like essentially same plot just runs again. I think Jade's right. Like, there was a tweet maybe last week from Kim Kardashian being like, oh, like, should I watch Bridgerton? And, you know, one of the top comments was Nicola Coughlan, who plays Penelope, being like, you know, I'm a bit biased, but yes. But then one of the other top comments was someone being like, oh, like, here's 5 reasons why you should. And it's just like a sort of fan cam footage of Simon just smiling in different poses. And I'm like, yeah, I think that is a lot of it.
Yeah. Licking a spoon.
Pretty much.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, when he's licking the spoon.
And Anthony, like I just don't think has had the same effect. I think there's an element of like Bridgerton has to sort of be about the Bridgerton family, right? But like
sure.
the extent to which like that's the central plot line. But Robbie, I was wondering, do you have any kind of like final thoughts or things to kind of sum up the series with?
I didn't know until just a few moments ago that they're going to be focusing more on Anthony. So that'll be interesting to see. I don't feel like we know his character very well yet. What I'm looking forward to next season is that you and I will be at the same place. So you're not going to be watching this a second time through.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be watching this and we're going to not know what's happening at the same time, which I'm really excited for, which is going to kind of change the dynamic of this show, is because we're both going to be making predictions.
Yeah.
Which I think this is going to be fun. So I am really looking forward to that.
When you said we're going to be in the same place, I mentally was like, oh, like in the same physical location.
Which, I'm coming to visit you.
Well, like that's very welcome. But I just like, having been in like a year of this, like that just seems so improbable or implausible now. Like even if I were to see Jade, who seems to live like not too far from me, in 3D, that would be a little overwhelming. So I for one, am a little worried about my like re-entry into the world. Well, look, Jade, thank you so much for coming in to chat to us and being our first guest as we talk about Bridgerton.
Thank you for having me. No, I was delighted when you asked me, so glad to be here.
That was great. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to do this,
Jude. No worries at all. Sure, I have nothing to be doing on Friday anyway, so.
Well, look, thanks so much for coming on, and I guess we can chat again soon.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of a Bridgerton podcast. Simply marvellous as ever. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe on your favourite podcast app, and tell a friend. Until next time, ta-ta!